You've been in Nashville for longer than 5 minutes. You know the significance of that song. Fourth and final hour of 3D. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick with you. D-Mace will be back with us on Monday, back from vacation. George Plaster, future broadcast Hall of Famer on the line with us. Better known and affectionately known as Plasmo. George,
have
what's up?
Have we not worked together somewhere back in our past?
That would be a yes. Yes.
How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
You staying dry?
Yeah, but barely. Good Lord, what happened around 11 o'clock here?
I know. It's been crazy off and on. And then it just stops. It goes for like 20 minutes. It's buckets, and then it just stops. And then it comes back.
We need some of it, though.
Yeah, that's true. So now that the dust has settled from Sunday, we've all had a little time to digest, pick our spirits back up from Game 6. What are your thoughts on just this whole experience, this two-month journey that this city took and this ride that started all the way back in Chicago, which seems like eternity ago, but that's, you know, 2 months ago, back in mid-April, back in Chicago, to where it was at on Sunday. What did you think?
Well, for me, Darren, the 2 months of this was maybe the two most fun months I've ever experienced in athletics. It just kept getting better and better. You know, for me, it was, you know, meeting friends for road games, you know, to watch them together. Home games, it was acting like a maniac for 3 hours, watching our city, you know, just explode with passion over the whole thing. So now that it's over, to me, there are three things where the city and the franchise are going to get residual benefits. And I don't think everybody's going to agree with these, so just sort of bear with me on this. The first one, I think, is that all the Canadian hootie snooties who, you know, thought that this, the concept of Nashville and hockey, you know, was beneath them, I think they've had that stuffed down their throat. I think what's ended up happening is that the Predators and a great front office of marketing has taught the league a little bit about how they need to do this in the future, because they have set the bar and nobody has ever come close to it. The second thing to me, and this is important to me but may not be to anybody else, their season ticket numbers next year will be over 13,000. And they have never come anywhere close to that in the past. For instance, the year we did the rally, we got the season ticket number up to about 9,000. And at that point, that was huge. Well, now they're at a point where they can not necessarily relax, but they know before they ever go into next year that that part is going to work out fine. Here's the third thing that I don't think a lot of people are going to agree with me on. But I think if a Major League Baseball franchise opened up in the next year or so, Nashville has now risen to the top of that list. Because I think a lot of people nationally saw what we have suspected all along. We're a pretty darn good sports city. When we're behind something, we're passionate. We will turn out in huge numbers. And let's face it, the two baseball franchises that are in the most trouble are Tampa Bay and Oakland. And both of them have huge Nashville ties. Tampa Bay has Jeff Cogan. I just have to believe that, you know, at some point he's looked at their ownership group and said, you know, if this doesn't work out, might ought to think about Nashville. And then you've got the Oakland A's, who would be the second one. And, you know, they've got a AAA franchise here. And the truth of it is, our city's more equipped to be a major league city than Oakland is. You know, Oakland, they've now at this point, we don't have a stadium, and I realize there are a lot of variables here. But I have really changed my tune off of 10 years ago, and Willie's sitting there laughing, going, wow, a little revisionist history here by Platt.
I don't think so. I've kind of gone along the same evolutionary chain, too.
Well, nobody saw the growth.
I've sort of come along –
10 years ago, nobody saw the growth that we've had the last 5 years. I mean, you just couldn't predict that the city was going to blow up like it has over the last 3, 4, 5 years. So, yeah, 10 years ago, I think it was hard for – if we're being on – look, putting aside just what selfish reasons, which the three of us wanted, just because we like the – we love the sport. And so that was selfishly – it was yes. But being realistic, 10 years ago, this city wasn't equipped for that. Now, it's interesting that you bring that up because to me – what screams like it's for sure going to happen now because it's a smaller scale. I think it's going to take time. I think it will eventually end up here. I just don't know what that time frame is, but I think it's on down the road after this thing continues to keep growing and growing and growing. What to me, and it's strange for me to say this because I am certainly not soccer guy, but I am pro Nashville and pro what works in this city. I think what it screams to me is because of what we saw outside in these viewing parties and 50,000 and 100,000 or 150,000 people, that's exactly what the MLS is looking for. And these rowdy crowds and chants. I mean, that is what MLS, that has been part of the appeal and the growth of this, you know, millennials and soccer. It's all the fun and the blowing the horns and the chants. And to me, it screams 100%, or maybe not 100%, but 99% MLS is coming. I know professional soccer is coming anyway, but I think it's going to morph into MLS sooner rather than later. Within the next 5 years, it'll be here. That's the way I've looked at this run, if you think about the next professional sport here. That's just my opinion.
Darren, I'll take it one step farther. Several years ago when, I don't know, some team was getting rumored, you would get a lot of Portland, San Antonio, Charlotte, Louisville, and maybe Nashville. Well, I think what's happened is that whole thing, the next go-round will flip, and Nashville will be at the top of the list, and not just because Buster Olney has Nashville ties, but when you know, other cities start getting rumored, this one is going to be at the top of the list. It's not going to be at the bottom. It's not going to be an afterthought. That's what this playoff run has done. It has solidified exactly what we are as a sports city, and it's pretty damn good.
It is. It's really cool. And there is going to be a carryover, and we were actually talking about this earlier. I do believe that this run will benefit a little bit of everybody. It's going to benefit the Predators the most, for obvious reasons, but I do think that other sports entities in this town can benefit from it. And it may sound silly now, but, you know, you're sitting over on the campus of Belmont. You don't know about this 17-year-old kid that was sitting in X market right now that may be on Belmont's radar because he's a pretty good high school basketball player that sat there and watched this and said, man, that looks like fun. Nashville looks like fun, or was on the internet or on his phone reading how much pub the city was getting. And all of a sudden, Belmont has a little bit more lure for him just because of all the stuff he was reading and watching about the atmosphere in this city. It may be a little bit of a stretch, but I do think there could be some of that. The Titans may benefit a little bit on the free agency market by somebody saying, you know what? That looks like a fun place to live. And we know today's athletes, we've watched it in the NBA, where they live is a lot more important than it used to be. I know it, in the end it's about the money, but also the location does factor in with a lot of professional athletes.
That's a great point you've raised, and there's no way to probably quantify it until it just hits you, you know, because somebody does something because of something. But I ran into this several weeks ago in church. There was a kid, 15, 16 years old, and Willie, he's from Charlotte, and he had watched some of your telecasts over the last couple of years and had become a big Predator fan. And
wow.
So he's wearing a like a blue polo that has a Predator logo on it at church. And so afterwards I said, hey, what's the story on this? And he said, I'm a big Predator fan. I live in Charlotte. And I was like, wow, you know, so there's some, you know, there's some there's some stuff happening out of this. Knoxville, Tennessee turned out to be the fifth largest TV market watching the Stanley Cup. I believe on game one was where that stat came out. You know, Atlanta had an NHL team for a while. There were people from Atlanta who I know, and you all know who I'm talking about, that were texting me during games telling me, I'm watching, here's what's going on, that penalty should have been, or that penalty should have been. I mean, it wasn't like the Braves in 91 where the entire Southeast galvanized around it, but there are little pockets of little predator insurgencies where I think people are going to be shocked over the next couple of years to find out where some of these people are coming from.
Actually, as the series went along, Knoxville climbed as high as fourth in the country. So you had Pittsburgh, Nashville, Buffalo, and then, ironically, we just hired Phil Housley, and Knoxville, fourth highest-rated TV market in the country as the series went along. Any of us could have ever seen that coming.
And that screams to, because a little of this happened when the Grizzlies made the advance to the third round. You guys remember we did a show one day for about an hour where we asked people to tell us, are you getting into the Grizzlies run? And quite a few people were. And, you know, the Predators are smart enough. They're likely to have a caravan stop in Knoxville or figure out how to play a preseason game up there. You know, leave it to them to figure out how to get those people to come down here, you know, for a weekend. Those are some of the residual benefits. And I'll say this. I refuse to let what happened Sunday night, the fact that we didn't win, ruin two great sporting months of my life. Y'all would have been shocked at the level of maturity that I showed on this. I just refuse to let Game 6 ruin two great months.
Well said. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back with more with GP, George Plaster, on the other side. First, let me talk to you about Cool Springs MD. You know I love talking about Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and Daphne Lodge, the board-certified physician and the registered nurse. They are the dynamic duo that runs Cool Springs MD. Been doing it for over 20 years in this market and making a ton of you in this area healthier, happier, and a more beautiful you. And if you're like me, who doesn't want that, especially the older we get as adults? And they've got more than just Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and Daphne Lodge. They have a team of doctors, nurses, and counselors that are there to sit down with you and focus on what's bothering you and support your journey to a well-being. Whether it's weight loss management, they've got a trainer there on site with their own room and programs that can get you headed in the right direction immediately. Natural hormone replacement therapy. Maybe you've never heard of that or ever looked into it. Not sure what I'm even talking about, but you haven't been feeling the same. Been feeling really sluggish lately. Hard to get motivated or experiencing highs and lows. Talk to them about that. Can be a real game changer. Cosmetic procedures, preventative maintenance, skin rejuvenation, or just simply your general wellness. They do it all, and they do it all under one roof. 1642 Westgate Circle, Suite 100 there in Brentwood, right off 65 next to Shogun Restaurant. State-of-the-art facility. You will feel at ease the minute you walk through those doors. CoolSpringsMD.com is their website to find out everything about them. Those numbers to make that appointment, 690-6600. That's area code 615-690-6600. Make that appointment at Cool Springs MD and go see them. If you want to go check out the story on thegamenashville.com, the story about Phil Housley going to Buffalo, it's up now. Jeremy Gover putting that up there. Go to thegamenashville.com to check out the story on Phil Housley accepting the job in Buffalo as the new Sabres head coach. George Plaster on the line with us. Willie, the floor is yours.
George, I want to start with something that we often talk about when you try to piggyback off of something that's unusual like this. I mean, you have an energy going in this city that is pretty unique. I don't know that you could ever top it. And we had a caller the other day that had us thinking of you. He said he's a big Braves fan, And he said when they won it in 1995, it didn't quite match the special run of 1991. How would you compare those two things?
I totally agree with him. Willie, when the Braves won it in 95, it was more a feeling of relief because there had been a lot of, well, you know, they're the team of the decade, but they have no world titles. And so it was more a relief. It was more, well, when are you ever going to knock the door down? In 91, there was an innocence to the whole thing. There was a tomahawk chop. There was, I mean, people were giddy. The entire Southeast was just absolutely on fire about that team. I totally agree with the caller. The first go-round probably will never be duplicated, except I'd like to see, you know, if it happens a year from now here, this same scenario, and they take it to Game 7, and let's say they were to win, I think there's a passion level here that there is not in Atlanta. Okay, no matter how much I tried to, you know, be the biggest Braves fan ever, that city doesn't have the feelings that I have. And there's a passion level to this Predator thing that I have never seen in sports. And I can't put my finger on exactly what caused it. It's probably three or four different things. The Section 303 group led by Mark Hollingsworth, the rally, any number of things have caused that level of passion. But there just aren't many teams out there that haven't.
It'll be interesting to compare, and I hope we do get to compare, you know, what it's like when they win it compared to this first run that they made here. And along those same lines, we've had so many conversations over the years about the Titans. I think they have an opportunity here. We had Avery Williamson on today. I heard Brett Kern on with the guys today. Several of the players that have been going to the games and they've been watching what's going on, they've all said the same thing. Boy, I hope we can capture some of this excitement at our games. And they can do it, but the Predators, and you just sort of laid out some of the things, George, they had laid the foundation to have this kind of support because of all the work they'd done to cultivate and connect with their fan base. I really hope the Titans go to school on it because if they do nothing, I'm sure they'll still grab a little bit of energy going into next year because they have a good team, and I think a little bit of the Nashville pride will probably come out. But if they really work at it, they have an opportunity to do that same kind of thing. The problem is, right now, I don't think they've laid that foundation.
No, I don't think they have either. I think the team, I think you can make the argument that the upside of their team is better than anybody else in their division. But the game presentation has been a complete joke. I mean, I remember 3 years ago, and you all are going to laugh. You know, about 3 years ago, they made this big to-do about how they'd hired this company and, you know, they were really going to upgrade it, and all you got was this Titans defense, Titans. And I used a word I don't really even know what it means, sophomoric. It was just so silly and so hokey. And I was like, this is what they think is going to get people going? I think they need to bring somebody in from somewhere who really gets that. You know, who really gets what has turned this city, you know, on its ear. Because clearly at this point, they don't have that person.
I agree. And I think another thing that I would look at if I were the Titans is the Predators' legwork that they did to try to minimize the secondary market and the selling of tickets to other teams' fans. They did it tremendously well, to where there was no presence of Blackhawk fans, Blues fans, Penguins fans, Ducks fans of any significance. There's always going to be a handful, but it's not something that you felt an impact from. The Titans have got a lot of work to do in that area. And again, even if they win and they get some momentum going, what's been happening for years over there is not going to change overnight. So they've got to start that process.
Willie, to me, it comes down to one real fundamental, and that is that, and I'm a season ticket holder of both, and so I've got the right to have an opinion to it. It's only been in the last couple of years that the Titans have acted like they care one way or the other about their season ticket holders. And I'm jaded enough to say that the only reason they do is because they got it stuffed up there, you know what. You know, you looked around, there were these huge chunks of the stadium that were empty. And my contention is they never valued their season ticket holder. They sort of gave you the idea or sort of this philosophy of, we're the NFL and you're damn lucky we're here. Where the Predators went about it in a much different way, knowing that they had to fight for every last customer. And so, you know, they made it very clear to their season ticket holders, you will be valued. You will get something pretty significant out of being a season ticket holder. And, you know, I'll give you a for instance. My tickets as a day one season ticket holder are a whole lot less expensive for the Stanley Cup final than the person who just, you know, got off the turnip truck 3 weeks ago and said, I want to go. I mean, they showed me a real value to my loyalty. The Titans have never done that. They've never shown me squat. It's only been in the last couple of years that they've even remotely come to the table with the concept of, oh, we need to value our ticket holders. And that is the fundamental difference between the two franchises.
One more question on a totally different subject. I'm not sure if you saw all the details of the fallout from Louisville, but I can remember you and I and Floyd talking about this when it went down a couple years ago. And Rick Pitino has a classic Rick Pitino reaction where he still is claiming he's going to appeal and he did all the right things and this was a harsh penalty. If I'm a Louisville fan, though, I'm thrilled that they don't have any more postseason bans and they have 4 years probation. And Pitino only has to sit out 5 games, which will be embarrassing for him. But he joins Jim Boeheim and Bruce Pearl and a couple others that have had to do this. But what were your thoughts there? I just think it's classic Rick Pitino and it's classic Louisville.
I pay no attention to Pitino anymore, Willie. I'm so disappointed in what he's turned out to be. I mean, he absolutely thinks that all of us are morons. This is a guy that's a control freak, you know, that knows every last single aspect of his program. And now that I work inside an athletic department, I think I can say it even stronger. You would have to be absolutely stupid to not have no dealings with your players whatsoever to not know that some of that shenanigans was going on. I no more believe Rick Pitino than the man in the moon. I just pay no attention to him anymore. I'm very disappointed in him. I was a huge fan of his when he first started out. I'm old enough to remember when he was the head coach at Providence. And to see what he's morphed into is really pretty embarrassing.
All right, last thing real quick, George. Since you're a big boxing fan, or you've followed it your whole life, the announcement yesterday, Conor McGregor, Floyd Mayweather. Does that interest you at all in late August?
Yes, and I'll tell you that both of you are invited to my house to watch it.
Ooh, okay, Willie.
Okay, there's
the easy.
That might draw me in. That might draw me in.
Okay, hold on, Willie, because, you know, you're going to have more than that flimsy debit card.
Pony up is what he's saying.
You may have to pony up $10. You know,
okay, I think I could deal with that. It's worth
it. You think you could do that?
Yeah, I would do that.
Take some of Mahoney's lunch money. I mean, yeah. Come on. Here's the deal. I think it's going to be a trash talk fest between now and August 26th that will create an excitement level that the fight probably doesn't deserve. But here's the question. Is Mayweather now to a point where he's old enough that some problems will show up against a guy that, you know, if he ever does land, he apparently does a lot of damage when he does. And so, you know, I'm intrigued by it. And I think they know that the country will be intrigued by it simply because there's nothing else in boxing to get you interested. You know, the Klitschko's just don't move the needle.
The Klitschko's have got to be about 50 years old by now. They've been around for a while, haven't they?
You know, how old, Darren, how old are they?
I think they have finally given up the belts, I think, in the heavyweight
division.
I heard
one of them was going to fight Chuck Wepner.
I don't know if you know this or not, George, but I've been known to talk about MMA a time or two.
Right. Or is, what was it I used to call it?
You called UCF. It UCF.
UCF.
Yes. And I would say, no, not University of Central Florida.
No, what was the other one, Willie? Jiu-Jitsu?
And we would always ask Darren, what number are we on now? Is this number 83? No, this is number 86.
Does this one get a number?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question.
Well, this is a boxing match. So
yeah,
I guess
but it's a boxing match, so I don't know. But the UFC, it's still part of the UFC umbrella. I don't know. That's a good question.
Do you think McGregor has a chance?
Well, as I said earlier, I mean, he has a chance, a puncher's chance, but no, the mountain is very, very steep. But
okay,
he has a chance.
Let me try it this way. Is there a chance that early in the fight he hits Mayweather with an atomic bomb, puts him on the canvas, and then the fight really starts?
Well, the problem is nobody's ever able to do that to Mayweather, right? That is part of
– it's like Rocky.
He
is
like
Apollo Creed.
Best at avoiding,
he had never been knocked down.
He's the best at avoiding it. Best in the business. So I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what's in part of the intrigue for me is Mayweather does not want to get into a street fight, and Conor McGregor wants to get into a street fight. So, you know, who wins out? Can he fend off McGregor for 12 rounds? I don't know.
So
we'll find out.
Are you all accepting the invitation?
I think it is a
– what's the date again?
August 26th.
August 26th.
Oh, I got to believe I can be there.
I would think
what night
that,
of the week is that? Is that a Saturday night? Or
it's
is
a
that,
Saturday night.
Yeah, it's a Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah.
What time will it start, like 1 a.m.?
Yes, 1 a.m., yes.
And they'll have – listen, they'll have an undercard with about – 16 fights,
right?
And you won't be able to name one of the fighters in any of those 16
that
fights.
That I can guarantee.
One of them will have been coming from Rahway State Prison, and, you know.
Good stuff. Hey,
yeah.
Have a good rest of your week. We'll talk to you next week.
You all take care.
All
good
right.
Talking to you.
George Plaster joins us every Thursday at 1 o'clock here on 3D. We'll be back.